Congressman Ron Paul, thank you for joining us today at the Kaiser Family Foundation.
Thank you. Good to be here with you.
Thank you. What do you view as the most pressing health care problem in the United States?
Well, it's the fact that the system that we have today isn't working and nobody's happy. So changes have to come. And in the direction that we're going in, if we don't change it, the system will not be sustainable because we can't afford it.
And do you think the unhappiness comes from the cost, the lack of coverage, the quality of care? Which is it?
Yes.
All three.
All three. I mean, it just isn't working. The cost is going up. The delivery service is bad. The doctors are unhappy. The patients are unhappy. And there's some people involved for financial reasons. The care has been taken away from the doctor-patient relationship and delivered to corporations. So it's a Wall Street event. And people sort of recognize that, but they see the problems and they feel the problems. But unfortunately, too many of them saying, well, you know, we've tried government now for 35 years. What we really need is more government. And that's what we're involved in now, is making these decisions. And the country has to make a decision on whether we go toward a freer market approach or whether we go toward more socialized medicine, because we're in the middle now. We have corporate medicine, and I don't think it's a good system at all.
And as you know, there is this great philosophical divide that you just described between investing the power of healthcare in government versus the private sector. Some of your opponents among Republicans and certainly among the Democrats favor more government involvement. You fall on the other end. Why?
Well,
and how?
Because every service, I believe, you know, from a philosophic viewpoint, that all services and goods are best delivered in the marketplace under a free system. If you want cell phones, you don't ask FEMA to set up a bureaucracy and say, we want to deliver cell phones at the maximum effort, you know, most people to give them to the most people possible at the cheapest rate. No, the market did that. Prices keep going down, whether it's computers or televisions or cell phones. Those prices go down in spite of inflation. We have constant inflation. In medicine, although there's more technology available to us, prices keep going up. So unless we recognize that, we will go in the wrong direction. And there's ways we can go in the directions of delivering health care in a free market system. It's through health savings accounts, letting patients have more control, make sure they can pick their doctors, make sure that if they want holistic medicine, they can. I'm also an advocate of a lot freer entry into the marketplace, because physicians and health professionals have always liked to protect their industry through licensures. So there are some things that a nurse could do every bit as well as I can do, but by the law, they can't do it and they can't prescribe. So you need more competition. So there's a lot of reasons why the free market could do a much better job at a lot less cost.
But in a Paul administration, what would happen to the government programs that we have now and have had for many decades? Medicare, Medicaid, SCHIP, the program for children. What happens to them?
I have a precise answer for that, because obviously I don't run to be president or even run for Congress by saying, well, I'm out or cut off the medical benefits. But philosophically, I can make an argument that that is not the best way to do it. But you have to have priorities, even for myself, who's very philosophic and idealistic in the sense of moving one direction or the other. I certainly don't think that it's better to move toward the government approach. But I know this is about medicine, but I can't bring up medicine without talking about the amount of money we spend overseas. Because we are spending, our foreign policy involves up to nearly $1 trillion a year. And I think it gets us into trouble. I could cut $300 or $400 or $500 billion from that, still have a strong national defense, and have funds available to tide people over, people who have become dependent, whether it's medical dependency or Social Security. There's no reason why we should put them out in the street. But I would certainly encourage a younger generation who's very, very leery of this whole system, because they know the entitlements can't be handled at the rate we're going. We're talking about $50 and $60 trillion in medical entitlements. I mean, it's horrendous. But I would say that you can do this. Let the young people get out. Encourage them to assume responsibility for themselves for their medical care, just like everything else.
Through their lives.
Right. And through tax changes and, you know, various ways, but they'd have to assume responsibility for themselves. But now that they're recognizing the government's not going to come through, they probably won't come through any more than taking care of the victims of Katrina. At the same time, you would have more funds available to tide people over who've become very dependent. Because once you get young people out of the system paying less taxes, you say, well, where's the money going to come from? Well, there's not a shortage of money. There's a shortage of wisdom on what the priorities should be. So I think very well, instead of now, they complain, you know, we have to spend all this money on the military. We have to cut medical benefits, you know, in some areas. We might make great promises, but they might start, you know, nickel and diming. Even for some veterans' benefits, they do that. But I think my approach is logical and could work, but it's major because you have to change an attitude about what our foreign policy ought to be.
But just to clarify, your idea is, it sounds like, is to maintain Medicare, maintain Medicaid. But for maybe those people who are uninsured, drive them toward HSAs. For the younger generation, have them begin thinking about health care as less an entitlement than some older Americans may think of it?
Yeah, I think that's pretty much my position, and it is maintaining, but with the idea that it doesn't have to be permanent or transition into more government control, because I want to get away from this corporate control of medicine. Mm-hmm. So yes, maintain in an orderly fashion, do it wisely, because the alternative is if we continue this way, we will have a financial crisis where the money won't buy anything. We might send the checks out for Social Security. We might, you know, try to buy medical care, but it won't be available. Because inevitably, when you develop a system like this, where government gets involved, prices go up, services go down, and then doctors drop out, and then there are shortages. And that's what I want to avoid, the collapse of the system, if we continue to finance it the way we're doing.
Do you have a philosophical belief that every American should have health insurance, have access to health coverage?
And I think you've stated it correctly, should, but I don't see it as a right, which is different for me, because you have a right to your life, and you have a right to your liberty, and you have a right to the property you earn. But you don't have a right to a house or a right to a job, and you don't have a right to medical care, because that involves a violation of somebody else's rights. And because they have to take it from them. You say, well, no, it's coming from the government. The government has nothing, produces nothing. So if I'm the government to give you health care, I have to literally take it from somebody else. And ultimately, it's a poor person, because we usually inflate, we borrow, we can create economic conditions that hurt the poor. So even with this attempt to give this free medical care to people, it really undermines, and it's exactly what's happening today. The poor people who try to make it, they get gouged. I mean, if you happen to be in working for a big company or working for the government, you get health benefits, you know, dirt cheap. But if you're trying to make it on your own, you don't have insurance, and you walk in, you might be charged two or three times more than the government will pay for those services. So it has nothing. That's not the way a market.
You're talking about the working poor.
The working poor. And that's why we have to emphasize, you know, this idea that you can get major medical care if you can save a little bit of money and pay those first dollars and talk to the doctor. Before we had all this, medicine and the doctors always charged the least amount. Today, they have to charge the maximum amount of what they can get from the insurance or from the government. So the attitudes have been reversed of what happens in the marketplace. I remember when I was in the military in the 1960s, I'd been drafted, and I was serving in San Antonio. So I wanted to moonlight a little bit, work in the nighttime, get more experience. I'd been out of medical school for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And I worked in the emergency room, and I made $3 an hour. But it was experience, and $3 meant something then. So, but nobody was ever turned away. Nobody were asked about their income. Nobody was asked about their insurance. But the church was taking care of them. The country was, in a sense, more prosperous and could afford it. And yet people did get medical care. So it isn't like everybody's going to be in the streets. Nobody can show us pictures of people being in the streets before the 1965, you know, without medical care.
Have you or any member of your extended family ever been uninsured?
Yes, we have. I think I have for short periods of time. And we probably still have members of the family that are adult and they're young and they're
and
healthy and they don't work for a company that has it, so they're without it. But I'm in the process of, why am I not helping them and encouraging them? Because for about $100 a month, you can get a major medical policy. Major medical insurance, which is true insurance, is not that expensive, and it's when you pay for the first dollar of service when it becomes so expensive. What we have today is not insurance. If you get a policy and they pay your first dollar, you're getting some type of a service prepaid, and that's quite different than if you insure against a major illness or an accident. That way you can measure it, and the price goes down. But if it says, well, every time you have a sore throat and you might go to the emergency room, you're insured, I mean, this makes costs skyrocket. So we've lost the principle of insurance in the system that we have today, and it has to do with our tax code and various things like that.
And one last question on the subject of access and coverage. You had mentioned earlier about health savings accounts, and I presume that you see that as a vehicle for the working poor who are uninsured.
Good transition.
But we've taken a survey where we found that a family with an annual income of $25,000 would have to devote 13% of their annual budget just for premiums alone. So does that sound like an affordable scenario?
Yeah, but I would challenge you on that.
Okay.
Because that's the insurance that we think of insurance, so that they can get, you know, $5 copay and they can go see the doctor. That's not insurance. But probably for $1,200 they could be insured for major medical, you know, the real catastrophic illnesses, and then they can save up and pay and take care of, you know, the first $500 or so. Or corporations, because the company they work for have been devising that. They are moving this direction, where the company itself encourages this, because there's an incentive not to spend the money, because you get to keep the $500, you know, if you don't use it, or whatever the company provides, or your medical savings account provides. So yes, it's very, very expensive to have this medical coverage, but that is not exactly an insurance premium.
Let's talk about a couple of other areas involved in healthcare policy. If a Katrina-type disaster were to happen on your watch, how would you handle it differently than the administration did, so that we wouldn't see the kinds of pictures we did out of New Orleans, and wouldn't have the kind of experiences that people even to this day in New Orleans are experiencing?
Of course, there's two parts of that question. One is, in the ideal society where you have individual freedom, personal responsibility, and states' rights, this would be a state function. All the money would have stayed there, and you wouldn't have had central economic planning, because it doesn't work.
Okay.
And Katrina proves it. So it proves my point that it's a lot of wasted money. They gave out $500 million to people who weren't even, you know, suffering, and they weren't even in the flood area. They bought trailers by the hundreds that never got used. So this is a proof that central economic planning doesn't work. When Galveston had their disaster in 1900, they rebuilt, and they have a seawall, and that's in my district, and they didn't have a federal government approach. But once again, the transition, we exist, that's the law of the land, the money's been taken away from the states. What you have to do is get the best management. I try my best. I never spend a penny of Social Security, although I see a better system, so I protect it. So I would have to have the right kind of people to manage. But the emphasis would be different. I'd want local people to be in charge. I don't want the federal government to go down and be in charge and take over and kick out. We had more complaints when we have floods in our district about FEMA, because the Red Cross can't come in, the landowners can't come in. Somebody proposes, like in Louisiana, that if you want to protect your property, they kick you out and they take your guns. And I would want the local people to be in charge and work with them to be available to them and make the services available. I certainly wouldn't have the Air National Guard or the Army National Guard in Iraq. I'd have it available to the governor so that they can use it. So it's a whole philosophy that you have to look at in order to come up with a solution. But the responsibility of the president would be have the most efficient people that can make that work and utilize local control and local knowledge, rather than thinking there's one person in Washington that has all this knowledge and you can do it through central economic planning.
Final question. I think Americans like to have a sense of the priorities of a candidate. And as we talked before we started taping, in this presidential candidacy of yours, you're relying very heavily on the internet. I've seen YouTube videos of you as well. And on your website, there's very little mention of health care policy specifically. So what does that say about where this falls in your list of priorities?
You know, I think it's a good point and worth criticism, because I think we're short on
I'm
that.
I'm not really criticizing. I'm just making an observation and asking for an explanation.
We probably will and should, you know, do that, because it is an important issue. But I imagine the foreign policy has been a major driving force for me, because that is the top issue. Mm-hmm. And secondarily, I've been very much involved in economic policy and deficit financing and monetary policy, which incorporates all these things, because deficits cause inflation, inflation causes hardship to so many people and unemployment and this sort of thing. So if you're spending too much overseas or spending too much on medical care, you know, this contributes to that economic problem that I see. But yes, I think as the campaign goes along, we'll have more specific, not only on medical care, but on other issues as well, where we will have a prescribed policy. And unfortunately, even in the debates, it hasn't come up very much. It came up one time in all our debates, and you'd think I could have gotten the question, but I wasn't. I kept, you know, trying to get the attention of
it's
the
moderator.
It's
hard to be heard in such a large group.
Yeah, so, but I'm delighted that you have a program like this that gives us a chance to explain our position. So I'm very pleased that I've been able to talk with you on this subject.
Well, we're grateful you came in. Thank you very much, Congressman.
Thank you.